Our last case this morning is 2020-819, State of Ohio versus Clarence Lay, for the appellant, Ms. Spriggs.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Addison Spriggs, and I'm here on behalf of Mr. Clarence Lay. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. When an appellate attorney fails to include portions of the record which are necessary to determine the outcome of the issues raised on appeal, the appellate court cannot meaningfully review the assignments that are raised, and the appropriate mechanism for relief is to reopen the direct appeal. An appellate attorney must comply with the rules of appellate procedure. Here, Appellate Rule 9B, to ensure the record is complete and includes the transcript of the trial court proceedings. Counsel's failure to complete the record cannot prohibit a criminal defendant's right to meaningful appellate review and constitutes a colorable claim of ineffective assistance of counsel enough to sustain an application to reopen a direct appeal. This is directly contemplated.
Why not just make some argument about what was in the record?
The Court of Appeals found that there wasn't enough of a record for it to reach the merits of the assignment of error.
I understand that, but why wouldn't you on appeal say, here's what's in the record. This raises a colorable issue. If the Court of Appeals had the record, my client might have been successful. Why not make that argument?
That was the argument in the 26B. I said that appellate counsel was ineffective for failing to include the record. And Rule 26.
But what was in the record that would have changed the outcome? That seems obvious.
None of the transcripts were in the record at all.
Okay, I didn't mean in the record. I misspoke. What was in the transcript that had it been in the record would have changed the outcome?
Well, we don't know because the transcripts were never created or included in the record. This is directly contemplated in Appellate Rule 26B2C, where the assignments of error aren't reviewable based on the incomplete record.
You could get the transcripts, you could find out what happened at trial, and you could make an argument based on that, couldn't you?
It would have been inappropriate to include the transcripts with the 26B motion.
Why?
Because the rules specifically say that you should point to the portions of the record that are available at that time. And if the transcripts weren't ever created, they weren't available and they weren't a part of the record. So following the rules of 26B, it would have been inappropriate to include the transcripts at that time. It's more appropriate for a pro se defendant who has a right to counsel on direct appeal and right to transcripts at state expense to include the transcripts once the appeal is reopened and it proceeds as a direct appeal.
But you certainly could have asked to supplement the record with the transcript to show that there was an issue, couldn't you?
That is possible, but again, it goes back to the rules of Appellate Rule 26, where it says to point to portions of the record which are available to the appellant at that point. And because the transcripts were never created or included into the record, pointing to the language of Appellate Rule 9, where we get the definition of what the record is, it wouldn't have been appropriate to point to something that was outside the record. Mr. Lay did not receive a merits determination. And that is the prejudice here. His case was entirely precluded from review by the actions of his appellate counsel. While there's no case law defining the outcome of an application to reopen in this way, this court in State v. Reed defined prejudice as a reasonable probability of success if the assignment of error was raised on direct appeal. This reasonable probability is not guaranteed success. Here, in an appeal without counsel's failure to file the transcripts in the PSI, which would have supported the issues raised on appeal, there is a reasonable probability that the Court of Appeals would have decided the case differently. That is, that they would have made a merits determination. Arguably, the situation here exceeds the Reed standard of reasonable probability. It is a certainty that the Court of Appeals would have reached a merits determination with the transcripts and the PSI included. This situation before us is directly implicated in Appellate Rule 26B2C.
Counsel,
Mr.
Counsel, you're relying on 26B, but doesn't 26B2C require prejudice, a showing of prejudice?
Yes, and there is a showing of prejudice here on the face of the Court of Appeals decision, where it said it could not reach the merits of the argument. So it's not necessarily guaranteed success on the underlying assignments of error. It's that it would have been a different outcome and that he would have had some sort of merits determination.
Wouldn't you need a reasonable probability of a successful merit determination?
Yes, and we have that here. While this isn't a case where, take for instance, merger of arson and check cutting. I can't envision a situation where those two crimes could have merged. But here we have gross sexual imposition and sexual imposition, and very frequently those merge. And we also have a showing in the sealed portion of the record, which supports the fact that there were one victim and two separate instances. And the gross sexual imposition charges are alternative charges.
So given that fact, if that's undisputed, you know, usually the state just concedes that the trial court made an error at the appellate level. Why didn't that happen in this case? I mean, is it undisputed that this person was sentenced on four consecutive counts for only two incidents, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
That they were two alternate. The reason there were four counts, there were alternate theories. But it seems undisputed that it's an incorrect sentence, right?
You know, we can't necessarily reach the merits of that issue here. It would be more appropriate once the transcripts are in the record. Mm-hmm. But to the state's credit, they didn't oppose the motion to reopen the direct appeal.
It was the Court of Appeals that?
Correct. The Court of Appeals denied the motion to reopen and then also denied the motion for reconsideration and en banc review.
Okay.
The state didn't oppose either.
So, counsel, are you asking us to say that it is ineffective assistance of counsel per se if the hearing transcript or any other relative transcript from something, pertinent to the issues before the court is not filed? It's just ineffective.
Yes, Your Honor.
Without a showing of anything more. Likelihood of prevailing, that there was actually something that could have been identified in the transcript to bolster, you know, the allegation of ineffective. None of that has to happen. It's just, if you're a defense attorney, you do not file the transcript, the appropriate portions of a transcript, with the court on appeal, that is ineffective assistance per se. That's what you would like us to write?
I think that would be the simplest way to do it, Your Honor. I think that, you know, this court could find that a bare assertion, something that is non-frivolous, but not necessarily guaranteed success, would also be an acceptable rule. And I think that Mr. Lay has that here.
Before we get to the rule, though, whether it's non-frivolous or what, I mean, the underlying issue here is what kind of showing do you have to make? And I want to go back to your statement that you weren't allowed to file the transcript. You couldn't file it under Rule 26. Because when I look at that rule, it says very clearly that the application shall contain parts of the record, if available, but also may include affidavits from counsel. And clearly you could attach a part of a transcript to the affidavit. There's no reason you couldn't have done that, or counsel couldn't have done that, is there?
I think there is no...
Should we assume that the reason that wasn't done was because the transcript wasn't helpful or wouldn't have been helpful?
No, I don't think you can make that determination at this point. That part of the language, part E, any parts of the record available to the applicant, hasn't been defined. And there's no cross...
Wait a second. You read half of that sentence. Any parts of the record available to the applicant and all supplemental affidavits upon which the applicant relies. The rule clearly envisions that in addition to the record, because that may not be available, that counsel can file supplemental affidavits bringing in things to show that counsel was ineffective. So why not do that?
The reason not to do that is because this is merely a procedural step, and often 26C is used, but
the procedural step specifically says to file supplemental affidavits. I mean, it clearly envisions that that is part of the procedural step, not as coming later.
I understand that, Your Honor. I go back to the fact that any parts of the record available to the applicant and supplemental affidavits. Yes, Your Honor. That portion of the transcripts wasn't available in the record, and you're here within a limited amount of time to complete an application or a motion to reopen. So there's a strict 90-day time limit. And so, for a pro se defendant,
so you could have filed an affidavit that said, here's what happened at trial. I've tried to get the transcript. It has not been prepared yet. I was unable to get it prepared. You could have done that.
That would have been an option, but again, it goes back to whether or not, if the transcript isn't created, I couldn't attest to the fact of what would be in the transcript if it wasn't completed in that 90 days.
Someone tried the case, didn't they?
They did. They did try the case, and that same attorney was the
Ms. Briggs. I want to simplify a little bit. The precedent that you provided from the U.S. Supreme Court in Roe v. Flores, Ortega, and Garza essentially says that when an attorney's deficient performance deprives a defendant of appellate review, there is a presumption that the attorney's performance caused the defendant prejudice. So I think the only nexus we have to be able to draw is whether the failure to file a transcript denies a defendant appellate review. Am I right about
correct.
That? And
yes, Your Honor.
Is there any scenario you can think of where not filing a transcript wouldn't deprive someone of appellate review?
I can't envision a situation, Your Honor, and I think that there are several cases that directly contemplate, you know, actions the court could have taken with in the absence of a record. And Appellate Rule 9 also contemplates the fact that an appellee may supplement the record if a certain transcript was omitted.
Because it's possible sometimes, I've seen at least, where based on the issues being appealed, the entire transcript may not be ordered up and provided, only relevant portions, in which case then the other side could supplement it if they felt that some were missing, correct?
Absolutely. That's directly contemplated in Appellate Rule 9.
Thank you.
I see that my time is running down. If there are no further questions, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you. Counsel?
May it please the court, Madam Chief Justice. This is Heaven DiMartino on behalf of the state of Ohio. I am asking that this court affirm the appellate court's decision denying the motion, the application for reopening filed pursuant to Appellate Rule 26B, and to reject the proposition of law that's been asserted by Mr. Lay. An Appellate Rule 26B application for reopening only has to be granted when there is a colorable claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, and the failure to include portions of a record from the trial court do not automatically per se create a situation where there is a colorable claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. There can be situations where someone is challenging specifically a plea maybe it wasn't knowingly, intelligently, voluntarily made. Failure to include the transcript from the sentencing or a pre-sentence investigation would have no bearing on the issue raised by the appellant on the direct appeal. In fact, when you looked at an appellate rule 26B application for reopening, you really are limited to what was presented by the first appellate counsel. And in this case, the specific issue raised by Mr. Lay's first attorney was that the court failed at all to engage in an allied offense merger argument. And the journal entry specifically says that the court did in fact conduct an allied offense argument and that no one objected to it. So when you have a situation like this, certainly the PSI has no bearing on that assignment of error. What could be contained in a pre-sentence investigation would have absolutely no impact on an argument that an analysis occurred or did not occur at sentencing. And when you have a journal entry that says something occurred, the sentencing transcript is not going to be necessary. It's not going to be something that an appellant could say they were prejudiced by the failure to include that and that it would have changed the outcome if the sentencing transcript was included. And now, to get to justice,
let me ask you this. Do you agree that it's not only a colorable claim in this particular case, it's not only a colorable claim, it's a claim that everyone agrees on. It's a meritorious claim that this defendant is serving an incorrect sentence.
Correct.
So why is the state even, I mean, the state has an obligation to pursue justice and make sure that trial courts get it right, just as defense counsel, right?
Right. And in this case, the journal entry reflects that an analysis was done. There's nothing in the record, and there's no, as Justice DeWine was asking, there's no statement by appellate counsel that even if she had talked to her client to say, I know the journal entry says that there was an analysis done, but it was not in fact done. And I don't have the record below. So I'm going to presume that the journal entry is correct and that, you know, a court speaks through its journal entry. That's axiomatic, that the court says it conducted the analysis and that no one objected. No one in our office, you know, asked for the journal entry to be corrected in any manner. So I'm limited to that record below. Certainly, Ms. Spriggs, when she filed her app Rule 26B motion, could have said this journal entry is inherently flawed because there was actually no analysis. She's not even saying that. She's given this court absolutely no reason to discredit what's been journalized by the trial court. So with this unique set of facts, there is no basis for which one could say there would be a colorable claim that could have been presented if the transcript had been included. Certainly, if this counsel is indicating to this court that that journal entry was blatantly wrong, then something could have been done about that. She certainly could have put that in her statement. And there's nothing before this court to indicate that is what happened at all. With regard to the inquiry as to whether or not a transcript, you know, is always needed when, even when you're looking at a sentencing issue, unless you're looking at specifically whether the court analyzed, let's say, aggravating or mitigating factors in a certain way, and whether they should have or should not have imposed a prison sentence or a consecutive sentence or a maximum sentence, certainly then a pre-sentence investigation would be relevant and certainly the transcript will be necessary. But if the only argument is, let's say, the appellant says the court imposed mandatory time and by statute that's not mandatory, then you would not need the transcript and you would not need the PSI. So this invitation by defense counsel to extend this conclusion that anytime the entire trial court docket, transcript, PSI, anything that was filed in the trial court is not included for the Court of Appeals review is just too broad and something that is really not necessary because not every issue is going to be raised on appeal. And it is not the appellate court's duty to root out an argument for an appellant. So if the appellant wants to, you know, have an attorney who files a very specific one issue on appeal that says there was no allied offense doctrine of merger analysis done, and then the journal entry shows that it was, that's the end of that. Ms. Briggs certainly could have filed an April 26B application for reopening saying appellate counsel was ineffective for arguing that there was no analysis when the journal entry reflects that there was an analysis. And if she had done that, then you would have needed a transcript and perhaps the PSI to get into the merits of that claim. But when you look at the motion for reconsideration and the entry that was put out by the Ninth District Court of Appeals, as well as their journal entry on the motion for reconsideration, it's very clear what the court is saying is that this is not a case where the transcript or the PSI was needed because of the issue that was raised on appeal and what is actually contained in the journal entry. So this case is completely distinguishable, as Justice Bruner was inquiring about Flores-Ortega and the cases that are cited by the appellant. Those are cases where there was forfeiture of any appellate review because there was no appeal perfected. That's not the case here. There was an appeal perfected. There was an argument raised. It just was not a good argument in the state's opinion based on what the record contains.
Counsel, let me ask, you're saying it, excuse me, just it wasn't a good argument, but if appellate counsel argues an issue on appeal that does require the transcript and it's not submitted, isn't that essentially no counsel?
I would argue that Appellate Rule 26B would provide a remedy to reopen. So if you have a situation where there is an argument raised on appeal and there's something in the argument that should have been contained in there, then that falls within App Rule 26B. And if an attorney raises an issue that's just wrong, and I mean, unfortunately, I have seen it where someone has raised, you know, an appeal issue, they'll say, there was no finding by the trial court for consecutive sentences. And then you look at the transcript and you look at the journal entry and it's in there. Well, then maybe you make that App Rule 26B motion to say, hey, that argument was so bad, or however you want to phrase it, right, that you didn't have appellate counsel. App Rule 26B is there to protect you for that. You would file the necessary application for reopening. You would attach the transcript. You would attach your statement. And then the court would grant that.
But you're saying you would attach the transcript for App Rule 26, but if an appeal is filed, noting, assigning as error something that requires the transcript, and that's not done, why isn't that in and of itself like having no counsel at all?
Because, like I said, Appellate Rule 26B, you would be able to have that reopened. So that's a mechanism that's in place to take. So if you want to articulate it or qualify it as not having counsel at all, App Rule 26B will allow you to have it reopened, and then you will have counsel. So you will not be forfeited from that review. In this situation, there was a review. It just was based on an argument that is not supported by the record. So again, if the App Rule 26B motion had said trial counsel was ineffective.
When you say not supported by the record, what do you mean specifically?
Because the journal entry in this case, unlike any of the other cases I've seen where there was a sentencing issue, where the transcript or PSI was not attached, and that was a basis for the granting of an application for reopening. In this case, the journal entry says, in fact, there was an analysis done by the court. And on top of that, no one objected to
it. What if that analysis was wrong?
Then that would have to be the issue raised on appeal. If appellate counsel in the direct appeal or in the App Rule 26B motion said the reason why the court was wrong or the reason why the App Rule 26B motion should be granted is because the trial court's analysis was wrong, that's a completely different scenario. That's not what we have here. We have a situation where the only assignment of error argued there was no analysis done at all. They didn't challenge the adequacy of the argument, whether the court applied the right standard, whether the court applied the facts that were in the PSI. That's simply just not before this court, which is why the cases cited by appellate counsel are distinguishable. The Sixth District cases that she cites to N. Ray LN talks about the timeliness of a classification hearing. That you need the transcript to see when did this actually happen. N. Ray White talks about consecutive max sentences. You would need a transcript to support the court's imposition of consecutive and or maximum sentences. Lay did not get a maximum sentence here. And there's no argument that the court erred in its analysis for consecutive sentences.
Ms. DiMartino, but you know, maybe there was no correct objection to the analysis on merger. Still, even for plain error, you still need a transcript, don't you?
For plain error, in this case, you would have to show as the appellant that the trial court committed plain error by stating in its journal entry that it had conducted an allied offense argument, and also plain error by stating in its journal entry that neither the state nor the defense objected to the court's analysis. So because that is what the plain error analysis would be limited to in this case, the journal entry is sufficient to answer that question. You would not need a transcript to answer that specific issue. If, again, appellant had argued even plain error in the court's analysis of the allied offense argument, then you would need the transcript. But that's not what the appellant in this case argued, which is why the cases that talk about forfeiture of appellate review are inapplicable here and are distinguishable. The Sixth District Court of Appeals cases, like a suppression issue, she raises the Carpenter case, that involved a journal entry about a suppression without having the transcript to support what the findings of fact were, which we have to look at whether there's competent, credible evidence in the record. So you need a transcript for that.
But I thought you were pointing to the fact, though, that the issue about that was in the journal entry about the allied offenses, that wasn't raised, but it could still be looked at under plain error, but you still need a transcript to know what the trial court said in making its analysis.
It can be looked at if it's raised. It was not raised in this case.
But when an issue is not raised below, it's rather than waiver, plain error in the right circumstances can be used by the court to try to achieve justice.
I agree with you that plain error would be the standard of review,
But you need a transcript for plain error.
You need a transcript for plain error if you are looking at an analysis of factors of evidence that's presented. In this case, you're looking at an analysis of plain error in what the court journalized. And there's nothing in this record to support a conclusion that the trial court erred, let alone committed a plain error, when it said, I conducted an allied offense argument. And when I was done with that analysis, I said the 2907-05-A1 and 2907-05-A5 do not merge, which I would argue in contradiction to Mr. Lay, those are not going to merge. One requires substantial impairment, one requires threat.
How do you know without a transcript?
The 05 and the A1, you can argue without a transcript because they require different elements and different animus. So in this case, you're really only looking at whether the 05 and the 05 merge with each other and the A1 and the A1 merge with each other. But either way, that is not before the court. That's not an issue before the court. The only issue is plain error as to the argument raised on the direct appeal, which was that the court did not do any analysis at all. So you do not need a transcript for that. This case is just different as opposed to a case where the journal entry was silent as to whether or not there was an allied defense argument. And also because the issue raised on appeal did not get into the merits of the analysis, it was just whether or not the analysis occurred. So under this set of facts, it's distinguishable from the cases that are cited to you by the appellant. And it would be distinguishable from what your honor is talking about, which is if there is a plain error argument where I need to see the facts, then I need to have that transcript. But if you're just saying something did or did not occur and the journal entry is clear about that, the court can decide that issue, plain error or any other standard of review.
I'm not saying something did or did not occur. I'm saying, was the analysis correct?
Right.
You just can't tell if the analysis is correct without a transcript.
I agree, except that was not presented in this case. I 100% agree with you. I'm just saying that is not the situation in this case. And the Court of Appeals does not have a duty to say, well, here's what the issue was raised on appeal. Did the analysis occur or not occur? But, you know, it was a better argument, or I'm curious to see, I wonder if that analysis was correct or incorrect. That issue just wasn't presented to the Court of Appeals by the attorney who had the direct appeal or the current attorney who raised the Apple 26B motion. So I apologize if I was not answering your question directly. I think I probably got around to it in a roundabout way, and I apologize for that.
Counsel, the court could have said exactly what was in the journal entry from the bench. I've conducted the analysis and I find, you know, it doesn't apply or whatever the language was in the without going through all of the considerations that he or she used, he could have done or she could have done that analysis in chambers privately and then came out with the conclusion and put that on, which is you know, it doesn't fit here, basically. And then we're going to move on, and nobody, you know, nobody objected to that at the time of the sentencing. So just because they said they did an analysis is not proof that that analysis was spoken and incorporated into the record for review by the appellate court.
I absolutely agree. And if that was the issue raised, I would say that they had the ability to set forth a colorable claim, but they did not do that in this case, and that is not what the record shows. If there are no further questions, I would rest on my brief. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Counsel, you have a little over a minute.
The Court of Appeals did not say it was relying on the journal entry, as the state is now arguing for the very first time. The Court of Appeals said they needed the transcript to review the merger issue. The journal entry that the state is arguing for the very first time could still be wrong. And the only way to verify that is with the transcripts, which were never created. Further, the Court of Appeals used to routinely grant these 26B motions. I cited to State v. Reed in my brief, and this is now a shift in their policy. I would ask that this court remand to the Court of Appeals for a reopened direct appeal, because when appellate counsel fails to file all transcripts which prohibit any appellate review of a conviction, there's a genuine issue as to the ineffective assistance of counsel. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.